Hello there, and welcome to episode 70 of the Hawthorns Debate Club. My name is Jamie Clay, and I'm joined most weeks by two gentlemen to have a few conversations and discussions about West Bromwich Albion. But the injury-ravaged season claims yet another. There's just two people on the podcast today. So this week, I am joined by my good friend, Alex Collins. Let me say a warm hello to you, Al.
Hello.
It's just the two of us today, mate. How are you feeling about it just being us two against the world?
Yeah, we're the ultimate duo, aren't we? Duolingo.
Simon and Garfunkel. What other good duos are there?
Reeves and Mortimer, or now Mortimer and Whitehouse. Bill and Ben.
Bill and Ted. Beavis and Butthead.
What about a band? Is there a good band?
The White Stripes.
Yeah, Death From Above.
Death From Above, very good. Well, before we get to more and more obscure references, it's going to be a kind of a weird episode today. I think most of us are in a bit of a weird place with the Albion, a bit beaten up by the season that's gone by already, and the Sheffield United result seems to be the final nail in the coffin of this season. And so I guess it's a case of maybe there is a very, very slim chance, a small possibility that there is still the smallest grain sliver of hope of us making the playoffs. But I think most people now are resigned to the reality that West Brom will be waking up next season in the Championship. And it's a time to take stock, I think, reflect on a season that started with Steve Bruce and ends with Carlos Corberan. And there'll be plenty of time to dissect all of that in the pre-season. But I guess today is more about where we are today, just kind of sitting on the couch, lying down, and then just discussing how we feel about things. But before we get to mine and Alex's therapy session, let me say a huge thank you for downloading and listening to the podcast. We always appreciate every single person who downloads and listens to the podcast. We especially appreciate you when you share the podcast. Many of you do that on Instagram. We really do appreciate that. If you've never done it on Instagram, perhaps this is the week. Perhaps in Joe's absence, we can really make the podcast the best it's ever been, really make it wildly popular, transcend the medium of podcasts and become some sort of worldwide phenomenon, not unlike Bill and Ted. But before we get to that, if you do want to leave us a review on the platform you're listening to this right now, we'd also appreciate that.
Well, I've just thought, Jamie, we've missed a trick here, because we should have thought about famous Albion duos.
Oh, good.
Some, like, centre-backs, strikers.
Who could you do? Who, go on. What's the first one? What's the first Albion duo that comes to your head?
McInnes and Johnson in the centre midfield.
I was going to go Hughes and Roberts up front.
That was class.
Kamara and Phillips.
Big Dave Gilchrist.
Yeah, we've had some good ones down the years.
Texeria and Corran. They were kind of, and Dorans, but that's a trio really, isn't it?
A trinity, so to speak. Who's the current duo in this squad? Malumbi and Yakushlu, maybe?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Or you could go either side of the pitch and perhaps go for a Clement Eagle Ballis.
East meets West.
I'm definitely showing that I've got a favourite era here, aren't I?
I do. I don't want to say. We, to be fair, beyond that, I think we get into speculation because we were never there. Well, Al, we've kind of skirted around it already, but we've got to really talk about where we've been, where we've come from. And the reality of it is that West Brom are currently sat in ninth position. We are 2 points outside the playoffs with two games remaining for, well, virtually every team now. Sheffield United have still got a game in hand, but obviously they're bygone. But we are 2 points behind Sunderland, who obviously now leapfrog us into six. It's looking like a massive ask for us to pull this one out of the fire. The reality of it being is that obviously it's going to require us to win the next two games at home against Norwich, away against Swansea. And it's also going to mean that a lot of the teams around us are going to have to drop points. And I think the big issue we've got is there are so many teams fighting for a single place. It feels like an awful lot has to go Albion's way. Although it has been over the last few weeks, it really has felt like people have been like lining the streets for this royal procession that Albion, like waltzing our way into the playoffs. But that's crumbled again, I guess, over since the Sunderland and Sheffield United games. Did you watch the game last night?
Yeah, I watched the game.
Yeah, what did you think?
Yeah, it was a really frustrating game to watch. I thought the first half we were unlucky not to be ahead. I thought the referee made a few bad decisions. We should have had a penalty, and it comes back to the like bad refereeing again. But in all fairness, you do make your own luck. Perhaps our style of game or the way that we play attracts more dodgy decisions than other teams. But I did feel hard done by, and there were a few, glorious chances that we should have put away. Grant should have scored. I think there were a few others as well. We were unlucky in the first half, but second half, Sheffield United came out and they just did the business, really. I think we were punished for not capitalising on our possession in the first half. And yeah, they look solid. I mean, Sheffield United aren't a great team. They're going to struggle in the Premiership, but that Berger, really rate him as a player. I think he's great. And that is it. Who's that right back? Is it
Oh, but Baldock.
Baldock? Yeah, I thought he was quite good as well. But yeah, they were just clinical. Bit of a boring team, really. A game that we should have won.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Like I said, the first half showed me that we can rub shoulders with the best teams in this league. I don't think all season we've faced a team where I thought, gosh, these are so much significantly better than us that I can see why there's a gap between us and them. Burnley away, I think, was, again, you saw how much quality they had, but I didn't think there was a huge disparity between us and them. I think in the first half, particularly in this game, I thought we were fairly in control. I think there was a couple of opportunities that we should have taken. I think the Carl and Grant one springs to mind. There was one where we kind of slipped a counter-attack, like Jason Malumbi burst through, and I think him and BTA got in each other's way, and then the ball was passed backwards to a place where no one was standing. There was a cross to Taylor Gardner-Hickman where he caught it in like an overhead kick. There were multiple opportunities, like you said, Stonewall penalty. And the frustrating thing, I guess, about that is the referee recognizes there's a foul, and so what it becomes is a, what do you call it, an objective decision about where the foul took place. And obviously with VAR, that's something that you can say, well, no, it was categorically inside the box. And that's really frustrating because you're not even, the referee hasn't missed the decision, he's just got the location wrong. And that hurts a little bit because I think whoever scored the first goal in that game was going to puncture confidence big time for the other team. And the unfortunate thing for Albion is, I think we did come out in the second half. We didn't look as bright and sharp. Sheffield United, obviously pressing for promotion in that game in front of their home fans, really had something to play for. And that Taylor Gardner-Hickman pass, I thought Taylor Gardner-Hickman played really well in the first half. I've got to be fair. I think he brought some energy. It was a slightly different system in midfield, wasn't it? There's a few more bodies in there. But it's a blind pass. It's very hard to defend it, but obviously he's a young, inexperienced player. Spontaneous, quick passing is a huge part of his game, and he's just played it blind, hasn't he? And they've capitalised on it. Still had a lot to do, mind. And that Ndai has done brilliantly, and obviously Sander Berg has finished brilliantly. But I think as soon as that goal goes in, we're completely shot mentally. You can see how hard, like, Yukuşlu's beating the floor. It was a real tough blow for the team, especially because I think they'd held Sheffield United out for so long, and now it's all undone. And I think mentally, as far as Albion players are concerned, it's such a grind mentality to even get the first goal in any game that you could see there was going to be no real way back for us in this, and that was obvious. And then it was a case of just soaking up wave after wave after wave of Sheffield United. It was only a matter of time, really, I felt, before we conceded again, and that definitely was the case.
Yeah, I think the players, they looked like, I think the energy and like the injuries have really had played the toll. We had a bit of a discussion, didn't we, Jamie, around Gardner-Hickman, like his pass. I mean, I was of the impression that it was Carl and Grant's fault for not calling for the ball and making himself available. So it made Gardner-Hickman have to think fast and play something radical.
I genuinely think that, like, there's some Albion fans out there, and I'm willing to include you in this, Alex, as well. When they have a bad day, it's Carl and Grant's fault. When they wake up and the car won't start, it's Carl and Grant's fault somehow. We had a kind of a backwards and forwards over WhatsApp, didn't we? And talking about how there's no forward pass for Taylor Gardner-Hickman in that situation, and therefore kind of his reset pass is to go backwards, which is what we see Corbyn very often. We're playing around at the back an awful lot. There is probably in the last four or five home games, I have seen Darnell Furlong unable to play a forward pass because Jed Wallace is stood behind an opposition player in a position he knows he can't receive the ball. The criticism of Carlin Grant would never be leveled at Jed Wallace because there is genuinely an agenda against Carlin Grant at the Albion. Don't get me wrong, I am not a huge Carlin Grant fan. I think a lot of it is fair, but I think a lot of the time it goes beyond the scope of what's actually taking place on the field to just narrative-driven assessment. So I just think that Carlin Grant was no worse or better than anyone else on that pitch yesterday.
Yeah, I kind of get where you're coming from. Totally. I do think that Grant does get it in the neck a bit. I don't think he does anything to kind of defend himself very well. But I think it's wrong, isn't it, to play the blame game. At the end of the day, this is just one moment in a football match, and there were other opportunities for players to score and perhaps defend better. So I'm not saying that it was Grant's fault that we lost. I'm saying he's partly at blame for that error of judgment. I mean, Gardner Hickman played the pass at the end of the day, so he has to hold most of the responsibility for it. But I think he could have done something a bit better. And like I was saying last season, Grant's got his skills. He has got a talent when it comes to shooting. And I remember saying his shot is a bit like Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's, where he's got very little pullback, so he can shoot quick and hard. I do think he's It sometimes feels like we're playing with 10 men because he doesn't offer much in terms of chasing down or making himself available and keeping the ball going. And I think the other wingers that we've got do that. But yeah, at the end of the day, he's not the only player that I think has not put themselves in load of glory. But he just particularly frustrates me, and I'll have to put my hands up and say that.
I mean, I did try and look up the distance covered by each player in the games, but that's a really difficult statistic to get hold of. I would be interested to see if it was dramatically lower, but I just don't think I don't think it is. And I think we've seen the best and worst of Carlin Grant in an Albion shirt. There's times when he's brilliant, there's times when he's rubbish. But then again, like I said, I think you can level that criticism at virtually every single player in the starting lineup, especially over the last few weeks. The Sunderland and Sheffield United games, I genuinely think that there's been moments where we've looked like a team that's going to be comfortably promoted. And then there's been other parts where we look like the opposition is streets ahead of us. And that's where I think it's kind of started to ask these questions. Well, where did it all go wrong this season? And I think you see a lot of the disappointment in the way people have spoke in the aftermath of the Sheffield United game. But I keep having to draw myself back to last October, the first Sheffield United game, when Carlos Corberan came in and we were bottom, and how many of us said, if he just keeps us up, it will be enough. And so realistically, I think overall, where we find ourselves at the end of this season, kind of outside the dance, looking in at all the romance that's taking place in the playoffs, it's a failure of a season. But compared to where it could have ended if Steve Bruce has stuck around, you've really got to take your hat off to Carlos Corberan and say he's done a wonderful job in spite of one of the worst injury crisis seasons I've ever known as an Albion fan. I have never known Albion suffer so many injuries in a season. And not just the fact that players are out of the like squad selection, but you see your Kushlu struggling with an injury and playing Malumbi's going through the pain threshold. BTA's having to play full minutes every game and looking absolutely shattered because there's no role in there. You've got Eric Peters, a 34-year-old. There's all these kind of on-the-field injuries that are still being nursed. And I just think in another season, if the injury crisis hadn't been quite so bad, would we be 2 points ahead of where we are now? And I think the answer is almost certainly yes.
Yeah, I couldn't have put it better myself, Jamie. I mean, Corbyn, he's done something really special there. And I think if you look at statistically, the average of his points since he's been in charge, I think we would be sitting in the automatic positions in the table. I'm sure I saw that stat somewhere. And also, I've only seen the Albion lose once in 6 months at home, and that's pretty impressive. That is, that's like money well spent in terms of a season ticket.
Oh gosh, it's bonkers, isn't it?
And the atmosphere on Saturday against Sunderland, I thought was electric, and I put that down to Corbyn and him really kind of G-ing up the fans and saying, you know, you're the 12th man and we really need you. We need you to get behind us to really, you know, spur us on. So I think Corbyn, I hope we can keep hold of him in the summer and he doesn't, you know, because the lack of investment from the board and the owner, you know, I hope he sticks with us. I know he's recently signed that long-term contract, so we should be all right, but I hope he doesn't just leave us.
No, and I think the thing is that the shine has slightly come off his star with the kind of dip in form. I think, what was it like, early February, late January, where we were like at the peak of our powers and we looked like we were just on a charge towards the automatic promotion spots, really. And you had all of that conversation about West Ham and Leeds and all of these other teams coming in and like sniping him. Whereas I think now, he will be with us for the long term, and I'm happy to let him oversee a project that is more long term. And I think something that plays into the need for it to be long term is that without this kind of pool of money to dip in, we can't just go into this pre-season now for next season with the mentality that just a few key signatures here are going to make enough difference for us to get promoted. Last season, Yakushlu, John Swift, Jed Wallace, they felt like just those, the little bit of sprinkling of quality onto a good core of a team that was going to be enough to push us across that threshold into the Premiership. Now that we don't have the kind of wealth of resource, and when you look at these reports that are released by the club, and there's this like real blunt assessment of the finances and saying that in order to kind of keep the operations going as they are, we're going to have to sell players. That realistically, we're going to have to be looking at a massive overhaul of how West Bromwich Albion look and exist as a football club. And it's going to have to be a little bit more long term. It's going to have to involve more of the youngsters. It's going to have to involve players that are brought in on the cheap with something to prove. Because for all the best will in the world, we've got some really wonderful professionals at Albion. And I do include John Swift, Yakushlu, and Jed Wallace, seasoned championship players, or if not higher. And it hasn't worked. Just pure and simple hasn't worked. They haven't dragged us across. As much as I love them, they haven't pulled us across that finish line. So I'm keen to see what the future holds now. I'm actually almost quite excited. You look at teams like Luton, like Sunderland, who are having to do it with youngsters. They've had their financial trouble as well. It's not the end. It's not a disaster that Albion haven't been promoted this year. And I know there's this huge financial weight that exists over the club, but as I've been sharing with an awful lot of people, my kind of relationship with football generally and the relationship of money to football particularly has caused this like existential crisis in me. And I don't know how excited I can be about Albion getting promoted when the primary motivation seems to be from within the club, and then almost for us as fans, that it's the financial payday it offers. That's such a sad reality of supporting a football club that you're wanting to get promoted to sustain a business model. It just, there's, where's the romance? Where's the enjoyment? Where's the competition? Where's the merit? Where's the desire to achieve and progress and become a talent side? Because ultimately, if Albion get promoted, it's just going to be a dogfight, and the only reason people want up there is to pay the bills.
Yeah, that's so true, Jamie. It's almost as if we're become a victim of capitalism, haven't we? It's not to win trophies anymore. It's to financially sustain ourselves, which, you know, that's not right, is it? It's not for the love of the game. It's to get more money.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't mean, I don't want to just descend into this whole rant, but it kind of does overlap with a lot of the conversations around the Albion at the moment, especially with Action for Albion and lack of investment and all of these various other things that we're kind of desperate to see come to fruition. But it just feels so pointless at the moment. I know that sounds odd because we're recording a podcast about a football club, but it feels like there's never enough money that you can spend. I've never sat through a transfer window at the Albion and thought, oh, we spent about the right amount there. I've always thought we could have spent more. I've never had a season where we couldn't have achieved better short-term success. And I don't know, man, the whole thing weighs on me. And all if it's going to take a bigger billionaire to buy it off our supposed billionaire, and then we get promoted, and ultimately, again, it's just about lining someone else's pockets. I don't know how I feel about that. But anyway, we can rant about that all season long. We're going to move on to a little bit of a segment. There was a very successful series, mini series on Disney Plus called Marvel What If, where there was alternative realities, alternate scenarios presented to us as the viewing audience. And then we're going to do a couple of what if situations here. So, Alex, the first what if is, what if Steve Bruce was never fired? How would this season have ended differently?
I think half the players on the pitch would have been lynched. I think there would have been pitch invasions game after game. Probably it'd become a bit of a blood sport.
The Coliseum.
I think the supporters would be baying for blood. But yeah, I think if Bruce would have stayed, I think it would have remained a miserable season. We'd probably be trying to stave off relegation now rather than promotion via the playoffs. So I think it's, if anything, we should have got rid of Bruce a bit sooner, because now, 3 points, would take us into the playoffs. So it's just one game, and the amount of games that we lost 1-0, we'd concede early on, and then the other team would just set up shop, park the bus, and then just time waste. The referees would be completely locked against us, and then it would just be the same, that on repeat. It was so difficult to watch.
It's really funny, isn't it? Because it doesn't feel like that caught us all off guard. Like, how did it possibly go wrong with Steve Bruce at the helm? Nobody saw that coming. There were conversations before the season even begun where people were like, nah, this guy can't be our manager. I know he didn't have much of a blah 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 at the end of last year, but there's no chance this guy isn't any good. I think the people who are really, really generous said 10 games and that he's got to go after that. But to keep him till what, mid to late October or whatever it was, the damage was done by then. So I totally agree. I think if Steve Bruce had gone, I think, as you say, some sort of the Purge style anarchy unfolding at the Hawthorns every week.
Got a question for you, Jamie. So Bruce, he ends up staying at the Albion, but he has an epiphany, and he decides to drop Button and start playing Palmer in goal around October time. What position do you reckon we'd be in now?
It's really interesting that you say that, Alex, because I do think Palmer is almost as significant a difference as Corbyn. Now, that sounds really extreme to say, but you look at those successful periods under Corbyn, the particularly successful elements of his regime so far, and it is when Alex Palmer's in goal. That decision, I think, would have saved Steve Bruce's job. And I think we're not as good as we were now, and I still think he gets fired. But I think he sees the back of January. I really do think he makes it that far. And I think we end up finishing probably mid-table. But I think, honestly, that Button was such an obvious, glaring error every week. People hammering him across Twitter. Poor bloke, you know what I mean? He's still a guy, he's still just a normal human being, but he was being torn to shreds. It was obvious his confidence was shot. It was obvious he wasn't up to scratch. And Bruce persisted with him, and really, he kind of had to bite the bullet for that decision, that it was his guy. He was the one that offered him the contract. And basically, he went down with the Button ship. Like, he sunk on that ship.
Yeah, I do think it was a master stroke from Corbyn to play Erik Peeters in central defence as well. Because he's an old hand, he's a very experienced player, and that must give Palmer the confidence as a young goalkeeper to be able to rely on that experience and to draw off it. So I think that was a bit of a master stroke as well. But I agree with you, Jamie. I think it would have saved his life as an Albion manager, and then perhaps he'd have lost his job end of January, February time, and would be bottom half of the middle table.
Potentially, I think another interesting what if, and perhaps we'll land with this: what if Albion hadn't been hit by the injury comet that destroyed most of the dressing room and surrounding areas and left many of our players terribly injured for long periods of this season. If that comet hadn't struck the earth in West Bromwich and wounded so many of our players, where do you think we would have finished this season?
I reckon automatic, you know, or we'd at least be battling for automatic now. I think we'd be comfortably in the playoffs with a perhaps an outside chance of getting into the automatic.
I think when you look at those teams that are in the automatics or vying for the automatic promotion, that is the difference. They bring on players off the bench that are basically, it could be in the starting 11, and it's a configuration thing rather than an ability thing. And I think one of the things that people commented after the Sunderland game was Corbyn doesn't trust his bench at all. He really doesn't want to lean on those players. The players in his starting 11, even if they're not fully fit, he'd rather have those players than the kind of, I guess, really weaker fringe players. And when you see Middlesbrough and Burnley and Sheffield United bringing on players that would, I think, quite comfortably walk into our starting 11, it really does show that we've gone into this season paper thin. And we were always, I think, and one or two or three injuries away from losing that kind of top end finish. And throw on top of that the fact that we had half a dozen injuries at any one time and started off with the handicap of Steve Bruce, that really to finish where we're finishing is like an achievement beyond what most people could have possibly imagined.
Yeah, I think even you look at Palmer, he had his, like, after he got into the starting 11, he had a spell on the sidelines, and I think we played Button for two or three games, and you know, we dropped points as a result. And then you go up the field and you look at your Cuslew and Malumbi at the moment, you know, they are suffering and they're playing through injuries. And then on the left, you look at Phillips. I think we really miss Phillips and his goal scoring ability this season, more than we know it. I never thought I'd be saying that. And then also having Dean Garner to come on as an option and offer something a bit different, you know, once the defenders are worn out a bit, bringing Dean Garner on. And then you look at DK. It's only missed part of the start of the season, I think, and you know, he's missing the tail end. And, you know, we miss being able to bring something different on.
I think it's really interesting that point you made about DK particularly, because I think although each player you can see how they factor in, like your Matt Phillips and your Dean Garners, I think the DK one just feels particularly brutal and tragic. I think obviously he hasn't had a great start to life at the Albion, but you were starting to see like those moments of promise about what he might be able to bring. And I think in terms of something I know is very close to your heart, Alex, this idea of like an established goal scorer, one player who's going to deliver 20 plus goals a season, maybe even more, and how when you look at all the other teams around us, they seem to have players who score bags of goals. And you had a statistic earlier, didn't you? Can you remember what that was?
Yeah, if you'd just like to follow me into my Wikipedia corner.
Bounce in there.
Yeah, so I found this stat on Twitter. Andy Coulton wrote, I don't know Andy Coulton, but what he wrote struck a chord with me. And he put the top scorers from each team. And at the top, you've got Borough, their leading goal scorer has scored 29 goals. Luton, 20. Coventry, 21. And Sunderland, their top goal scorer has only scored 12 goals. But they've got three players that have scored above 10. And at the Albion, he's put BTA, Brendan Thomas Asante, as 9, which I think's not. I think he's actually scored 7. And DK scored 7 as well, from what I saw looking on the internet earlier. So that's like nobody has scored more than double figures in our team this season, which I think shows a lack of cutting edge. We haven't got that killer instinct in our team, which I think we could do with, really, to push us over the line next season.
I totally agree with you, Alex. I think there was part of the commentary that he provided on what those stats mean is I think one of the things he said was that a lack of creativity. And I think I understand that we lack a clinical edge, but I think we create so many chances, unbelievable. I actually followed up on this and went away and looked at the the league as mapped out by XG. And I know XG isn't everyone's favorite statistic, but it's certainly helpful. And when you read about XG, it's one of the best stats you can use in a predictive sense to see how future events will map out. If you're constantly underperforming your XG, you expect because of variance for that to map out. Like, go and listen to our friend Chris Hall at the Albion Analytics podcast, and he'll explain this better than I am. But the reality of XG is it just tries to give you a value of the chances you've had and what the percentage likelihood of the outcome of one of those chances being the goal. And if you do measure the league by that, and then it therefore expected points, we'd have finished third this year, a bit behind Burnley and Sheffield United. Interestingly enough, Sheffield United would have finished top, and Burnley would be second currently, and we'd be not far behind in third. And the big difference, as you've stated, is that those teams seem to be scoring goals from all over the pitch, and we've really struggled to kind of match our XG. And I think that's going to have to be something that Corbyn and the team address over the pre-season. Why do we create nearly as many chances as teams like Middlesbrough and yet so vastly underperform the figures that you'd expect?
Yeah, I remember having these problems with Valerian Ismail as well. We were getting like ridiculous XG under him, weren't we? But very few goals. Yeah, so this seems to be our Achilles heel, doesn't it? Converting XG to real goals.
Absolutely. It is our kryptonite, the old XG kryptonite. Right. What else can me and Alex talk about on this lonely episode at the Debate Club? I think let's finish up with a final question, I guess. And this one isn't a what if, it's a kind of a looking forward to the future. It's hugely unlikely that we're going to get promoted. I think everyone's agreed on that. Is there any part of you, Alex, that feels like we're going to see Albion in the playoffs still or promoted at all?
I think there's a very little chance. Now, I've had a look at the table and the fixtures. I think you could safely say that Coventry are up, that they're going to beat Birmingham on Saturday. They're at home, packed out stadium. I can't see them losing that. So they've secured, let's say, fifth place. So that leaves sixth place up for grabs. Now, Millwall and Blackburn, they're both on 65 points and they play each other on the last game of the season. So one of them is going to get 3 points, which will leave them at 68. I mean, they could draw. Let's just say that, more likely the one team's going to win. That means that the Albion need to win the next two games against Norwich and Swansea, who are in a bit of form at the moment. So I think, it's a very, very tall order. And that's without looking at Sunderland, who are currently sitting at 65 points playing Watford and Preston. Preston are about 12th at the moment. So they're not such a bad team. And, Watford aren't a bad team either. So, all they've got to do is win one of those. And then, it means that we need to win the two. So I think whichever way you look at it, we've got to win the two. But then I think there's a lot of stuff that needs to go our way. So I
Yeah.
don't think.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, the thing is that it's just out of our hands now, isn't it? It was in our hands for a very, very brief moment there, and it's been kind of snatched back out of our hands.
Can I put it like this? So it's not in our hands anymore. But I think there were about three other pairs of hands that need to go out, it needs to fall out before it returns to our hands.
Like a royal rumble of hands fighting over, what do you
Yeah,
call it? A suitcase.
I think there were too many hands fighting over the suitcase. And then even if we do finish in the playoffs, I mean, Luton look brilliant, don't they? The new
Yeah.
Brentford.
Yeah, Luton. I think Middlesbrough looked good for long periods. I watched their game the other night and I think they both outplayed us. Coventry looked like a really good side. Is it Robins there? He's done such a good job. I think we'd possibly be the weakest team in the playoffs, not just because of I think the other teams are really good, but just because this injury crisis and stuff like that. I feel like our players would be held together with sellotape by that point. Do you know what I mean? And there might be some coming back, but I got to be honest, I'm with you. I think the season's done now, and I think most people are there. I think really Sunderland was a must-win game, and we didn't do a job, and consequently put a huge amount of pressure on the Sheffield United game. And while it's mathematically not certain, and there will always be people who are like on the corpse still giving it CPR, beating its chest, refusing to give up on it, and they'll keep working on it. But it comes to a moment where someone got to come in and just call it and say, "No, it's gone. It's time to bury it."
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, just to echo what you said about Coventry, I mean, the problems they had with their stadium at the start of the season and like the back-to-back fixtures, you know, they've done an incredible job, really good young team. And I think next year, if you look at those teams that could be up against us, it's going to be a strong league next season. I mean, Everton might get relegated. Some of their players look ridiculous in the Championship.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree. Well, let's just look forward for a few moments' time, and then we'll wrap up this duo of a podcast. Norwich, our final home game of the season. Their playoff hopes are slightly more distant than ours, even. They're a point behind us. They currently sit in 11th. They had a little bit of a fruitful run under David Wagner for a brief period, but it seems to really have come undone again. And they seem to be really struggling for form, and they're not picking up many wins. They've had some really heavy defeats, if anything, but they haven't won in the last four games, and they've had some pretty heavy defeats to some pretty poor sides in that time period. Not unlike us, they're kind of coming towards the end of the season and not firing on all cylinders. It's a game kind of where you imagine Albion want to play for a bit of pride in front of the home fans, just give us something to go away this season with a bit of a smile on our faces. What do you make of the kind of prospect of Norwich at home?
I'd like to see us win that. I think we can win it. Swansea's the one out of the two that I worry about, but you never know. Like last game of the season, Swansea might not have much to play for. So I think be a raucous atmosphere. So beat Norwich, then last game of the season, anything can happen.
Absolutely, mate. I think I don't want to predict a win for us, really, because it just feels so difficult to almost get excited about the idea of even going to the Albion at the moment, which is really sad. But it's the last game. We've got to enjoy it. I think we're taking paella with us, aren't we, Al, in the flask? Get some paella. No Estrella, obviously, because that wouldn't be right. But we'll be eating our paella in the stands and just hopefully having a good time in spite of what's going on the pitch. I think that's where my existential crisis has left me anyway, that it is a nice day out with Carly and the boys and yourself and Steph and my dad. We go out, we have a great day down the Albion, and come win or loss, we're going to have a nice day out against Norwich. That's how I'm looking at this one. And if we do win and Carlin Grant scores six goals, it will be all that much more sweeter.
Yeah, they'll definitely be pie in my face.
I will. Sangria flavoured pie. Sangria is Spanish, isn't it?
It's a pretty nice drink actually as well. Quite like it.
Yes. Well, when Carlin Grant swills you with his sangria, I'll be there to gloat with him.
That's a good point actually. Why does he drink Estrella and not sangria?
Don't know. It's a bit more of a thug. That thug image he projects from the sidelines.
Suppose.
Very good. Well, we'll leave it there. We don't need to go into the Swansea game, I don't think. Not with just the two of us, mate. We'll leave that for braver minds. Well, let's land it there. How have you found it just being without Joe? A bit better, in all honesty.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think Joe, we need you back. We need you to keep us in check.
He's not revealed himself to be too much of a weak link in this whole process, so that's good.
Yeah, we didn't hear the ghost of Joe today either, did we?
There
Like we
might
have
be,
done in the past.
it might be edited in for comedy effect at some point, I'm sure. Depends how much effort I feel like in editing this, but we'll get there. We'll cross that bridge when I get there. Anyway, let's land this. All that remains for me to say is a thank you to you, Alex Collins.
Cheers.
A thank you to you, the ghost of Joe.
Well, we are not on because they're speaking of us. What is happening?
Knock once to confirm that you've been with us this whole time, Joe. Very quiet knock. Knock once again if you want to knock louder. Thank you for listening to the podcast this week, and we will see you all next week. Sweet dreams.